Lodge is celebrating 20 years of our friendly oil changes. A lot has changed in 20 years, but our commitment to fast, friendly, excellent service has remained the same. To celebrate our 20th birthday, we're offering $20 off any oil change. All you have to do is go to our website at premieroilchange.com and receive your gift. In Redding, check out our new location at 905 East Cypress. Discount also available at our Lake Boulevard, Anderson, and Palisadro location.
Premier, your friendly oil change. Premier, your friendly oil change.
Good morning, Reading. This is Rick Hughes, host of The Flatline. Heard every Sunday morning on KCNR 96.5 FM at 7 a.m. in the morning. Just want you to know that God has given us two ends, one to think with and one to sit on. And success in life depends on which one you use. It's heads you win and tails you lose. Come join me on The Flatline and learn about God's tremendous problem-solving device. 7 a.m. every Sunday morning, 96.5 FM, KCNR.
From the historic campus of Hillsdale College in Hillsdale, Michigan, where the good, the true, and the beautiful are taught, nurtured, and honored, this is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour, bringing the activity and education of the college to listeners across the country.
But the whole reason that we're in the mess of the administrative state to begin with is because Congress has given away its legislative power and is greatly reluctant to take it back.
This is your host, Scott Bertram. Welcome to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour, part of the Hillsdale College Podcast Network. That was R.J. Pistrito, author of Government by the Unelected, How It Happened and How It Might Be Tamed. We'll go in-depth with him in just a moment. Also on today's program, Daniel Darling will take us inside his book, In Defense of Christian Patriotism. First, we're joined by Dr. R.J. Pistrito. He is Dean of the Graduate School, Professor of Politics, and Charles and Lucia Shipley Chair in the American Constitution here at Hillsdale College. Dr. Pistrito, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Scott.
Also the author of a brand new provocation called Government by the Unelected, How It Happened and How It Might Be Tamed. It's a short book. You can find it over at Amazon.com and elsewhere if you like. Government by the Unelected is the title. For some listeners, it might be a familiar theme. I think we've talked about it here on the show previously. But as we begin, describe what you mean by that, government by the unelected. Who are those unelected people and what kind of power do they wield?
Yes, when we're talking about people, I guess the term that's been used for some time is, the administrative state, which sounds kind of opaque and mysterious and sort of semi-conspiratorial. But the provocation really came out of trying to make some sense of what the Trump administration has been up to in its first months. And so what I did basically was start with the history of how we had gotten to this point where we have lots of rule by bureaucratic agencies who are not staffed by elected officials, but by sort of careerists, and talked about how this grew over the course of the 20th century, enabled by Congress, enabled by the courts. And then that led us to the present situation that the Trump administration is kind of currently in the midst of trying to rein in. And so the provocation is basically a kind of 60,000 foot view picture of how we got to the situation where we've got all these bureaucrats making lots of very important decisions for us, even though we don't vote for them. And then what are the prospects for undoing it if it can be undone?
Are there particular figures in American political history who were most instrumental in bringing this administrative state into being?
Yeah, I have done a lot of work on the American progressives. I've written on Woodrow Wilson in particular, and that's one of the main reasons for my interest in these figures, because it really is a transformative moment for the country. And it's not because the idea of bureaucracy or administration is somehow novel to the progressives. Of course, it's not. The American founders from the very beginning were, in fact, quite insistent on having a good, vigorous, strong national administration with respect to those things that it was proper for the federal government to do. But the progressives, they understood that, but they also understood that administration, as they envisioned it, had to be very different. If the government was going to take on all of the new things that they wanted it to take on, then we'd have to view administration more as a kind of independent entity. And so, say, from the point of view of somebody like Woodrow Wilson, who was a pioneer in the late 1800s, right around the turn of the 20th century on this question, he said, look, the great problem with national administration now is that it's accountable to politics. It's accountable to elected officials. It's, you know, the people who are in these agencies have political interests, and that's making things impure. It's not objective. It's not scientific. We have advanced education now. This is the 19th century, after all, and this is the century of science and Darwin and all of that. And so we need to insulate administrators from these self-interested political concerns. And that was really the turn of the progressives that led to the insulation of a lot of the bureaucracy from ordinary political accountability.
Talking with Dr. R.J. Pistrito, his new provocation is called Government by the Unelected, How It Happened and How It Might Be Tamed. You talk about this court case, Supreme Court case, Humphrey's Executor, as a constitutional keystone for the modern administrative state. What did that case change that made everything else possible?
Yeah, so if we're saying what's new about modern administration, about the progressive model of administration that we're now sort of living with, it's that you have folks who are in these agencies who are insulated from political accountability. Well, how do you insulate somebody from political accountability? How do you insulate any person from accountability? You limit other people's ability to remove them from their job.
Right.
So just like, you know, if you work for your employer, it's really hard for your employer to get you to do what he wants if he can't fire you. And so likewise, what Congress tried to do and did in fact do during this period of the formation of the administrative state was to take large chunks of the executive branch to which they had delegated vast powers, and to try to wall these entities off from the control of the president, which is a kind of constitutional oddity, since the president is the only person in the Constitution who's given any executive power. He's given the total executive power, according to Article 2. And so the Humphrey's Executor case was basically a court case where the upshot of it was the court gave permission to Congress to create officials in the executive branch or entities in the executive branch, but to protect them from at-will presidential removal. And it had to do with the Federal Trade Commission, and there were some specific circumstances about that, but that was the upshot of it.
Talking with Dr. R.J. Pistrito, again, his new provocation is Government by the Unelected, How It Happened and How It Might Be Tamed. In 2024, the Supreme Court struck some blows against agency power, ending Chevron doctrine, expanding challenges to regulations. Are those decisions helping to restore some form of Republican government, or is there a danger, though, that we're replacing rule by bureaucrats with rule by courts, and courts are also not electorally accountable?
Yeah, that's a great question. And so, you know, one part of the story that I tell in the provocation is how, coming out of the 1930s, the courts kind of enabled this growth of the administrative state by allowing, you know, the kinds of constitutional absurdities that I've just described in relation to Humphrey's Executor. And more recently on the court, within the last decade or so, there are more originalists on the Supreme Court, and they recognize that this is a problem, and they have started, certainly incrementally, but they have started to turn the corner on that, and as you mentioned, to pare back the vast discretion of the administrative state that had been built up over decades. And so that's, I think, what's going on in part in the Trump administration right now, is that you have your folks who are staffing it, who've been watching this latest turn in the direction of the court, this increased skepticism, and they're trying to take advantage, to pounce on that. And I think they'll be successful to some degree. I do certainly share your concern, though, that if the consequence of this is merely to take the power of the administrative state and to move it from one group of unelected officials in the bureaucracy to a different group of unelected officials in the courts, this doesn't really move the needle very much in terms of what's actually important,
yeah.
which is to try to restore some kind of genuine Republican, I don't mean Republican Party, you know,
right.
small R Republican government. And so I think it can't escape notice that the courts are basically running the country right now. Every little thing that anybody doesn't like about the Trump administration is litigated, and you have very willing, biased judges at the lower court level who are just, you know, happy to intrude themselves wherever it is that they're asked to go.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is a danger.
More next with RJ Pistrito. We continue talking about government by the unelected, how it happened, and how it might be tamed. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Open now at Turtle Bay Museum, Thomas D. Mangelson, A Life in the Wild, featuring 40 of the legendary wildlife photographer's most powerful images captured in the wild. These iconic, once-in-a-lifetime moments include polar bears dancing on Arctic ice, the salmon leaping straight into the jaws of a massive brown bear, landscapes from all seven continents, and much more. The A Life in the Wild tour is produced by David J. Wagner, LLC, and is on display at Turtle Bay Museum now through May 3rd. Learn more at turtlebay.org.
Looking for work? O2 Employment Services has been working with local job seekers for the past 20 years. If you're tired of uploading your resume and getting no response, it's time to let O2 help you find that perfect position. Oh, and by the way, you pay absolutely nothing for our service. If you'd like our help, head on over to our website at o2es.com, click apply now, and complete our online application. We have connections with over 600 local businesses. Once we have your information and understand what you're looking for, we can introduce you to all the positions you may wish to consider. We currently have over 100 available positions, and we would love to match you with the one you're looking for. O2 Employment Services, the North State's leading staffing agency. Give us a call at 530-223-4674. That's 530-223-4674. Or visit us online at o2es.com.
At Plumas Bank, we understand business because we've grown alongside you in the communities we call home. We're proud to grow in Reading and excited to welcome Anderson and Red Bluff to the Plumas Bank family. With our new locations, your business gains expanded lending powers, more convenient locations, and more than 40 years of trusted community banking experience. Plumas Bank, building stronger communities. Learn more at plumasbank.com.
This is Ted Leidy with Northern Firearms Instruction. Do you have a crazy schedule and can't seem to get to a class to qualify for your CCW, CCW renewal, or maybe learn to use that new firearm you just purchased? Consider a private class with NFI. Learn to shoot a handgun, rifle, shotgun, or even a BB gun. Classes are taught by an instructor that you choose on your dates and location. Give NFI a call at 530-999-1822 or visit us online at usgunpro.com. This is Ted Leidy, and I'll see you at the range.
John Cruz here with America Outdoors Radio. Be sure to tune in this weekend and catch the latest in fishing, hunting, conservation, and destinations. If you love spending time in the field or on the water or in the woods, you're going to love this show. It's America Outdoors Radio, the fastest growing outdoors radio show in the nation. Tune in Saturdays from noon to 1 p.m. on 96.5 FM and 1460 AM KCNR, your talk radio.
Your next outdoor adventure starts this weekend at the Crown Motors Boat Sport and RV Show. Shop low show prices and see the KRCR Wild Eagle Encounter. Enter the photo contest with thousands in prizes, the Great Maine Lobster Hunt, and so much more. With kids activities, guides, lodges, and demos all at Shasta District Fairgrounds in Anderson. Lots of RVs, ATVs, trailers, boats, and more at the NorCal Boat Sport and RV Show this weekend. Get your $2 off coupon at Grange Co-op in Reading and enjoy free Senior Friday courtesy of Rain Rock Casino.
Please join us for a fundraising dinner in support of Clint Curtis for County Clerk. Saturday, February 28th, Anderson VFW. Live auction, drawing, games, and a great barbecue dinner catered by Rockin' Peas. For tickets, call Patrick at 530-222-3223. Clint Curtis for County Clerk is the only Republican in this race, and he needs your support now. This event, Saturday, February 28th at the Anderson VFW, 3210 West Center Street, and thank you for your support.
What is happening in the state of Jefferson? To find out, listen to the Jefferson State of Mind program Sunday mornings at 9 a.m. on KCNR with your hosts, Wynn Carpenter and Terry Raposa and Janet Chandler. To catch up on past broadcasts or to listen anytime, go to KCNR1460.com and click on the archive link.
Come out and play. Have you seen the bill? We all have to pay. The time has come for 51 in a Jefferson state of mind.
Efficient reason for regulatory change under the current doctrine?
Well, you get to the core issue in asking that question, because what's really going on at a higher level here, the big dispute is whether we are going to have government on the basis of the principle of consent, or we're going to have government on the basis of claims to expertise.
Mm-hmm.
And our system of government obviously is founded on the former, but what the progressives really sought to do was to diminish the importance of the consent of the governed and to raise the power of those who claim expertise. And so that's kind of been the operating principle of the administrative state. So when you give to an agency the power to make, you know, certain rules or regulations, that agency isn't claiming to rule because the voters have consented to it, because they haven't.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, the whole claim is, well, we're specialists. Like, we know something really particular about whatever it might be. It might be the environment. It might be trade policy. You know, who knows? And therefore, what the courts have said, okay, when an elected president comes in and he says, well, I'm going to change some regulatory policy. Let's say, for example, you campaigned on reducing environmental regulation because you think it's been too costly and it's harmed business and harmed the economy. And you made that an issue and you put it before voters, and voters agreed with you and they elected you to office so you could do something about it. And then if you turn around and order your Environmental Protection Agency to act accordingly and to reduce environmental regulation, you could well be sued. You certainly will be sued,
right,
in court, and you'll probably lose. Because what the courts have said, this sounds absolutely crazy, but what the courts have said is, no, the fact that you won an election and want to change administrative policy accordingly, that's not a real justification in our system. In our modern way of thinking, in fact, what you have to show is that expertise justifies this policy change.
So can you talk a bit about the State Farm precedent, that case, and how that effectively buttresses that argument, that bureaucratic expertise is over a democratic choice?
You bet. Yeah, this was it's a great example of what we were just talking about. This was about Ronald Reagan. He campaigned in 1980, and, you know, one of the keys to his election were the so-called Reagan Democrats, you know, these blue-collar Democrats in places like the state where we're now sitting, state of Michigan. You know, the automobile workers, you know, Reagan went to them and said, look, you guys, your business is being killed by these burdensome regulations. And so if you vote for me, I'm going to try to help the American auto industry by rolling back these burdensome and unnecessary regulations. That was a key part of his victory in 1980. So he wins, he comes into office, and eventually his Department of Transportation decides to roll back certain automobile restraint, you know, basically seat belts, right, airbags, automatic seat belts, these kinds of things. And following what he campaigned on, they try to lighten up these regulations. They get sued by the insurance industry. The State Farm sues them, of course, because if an insurer wants the government to make you drive a car in bubble wrap, yes, and go 2 miles an hour, that would be good for them. So in any case, but the court agrees with the insurance industry. And the court said, look, the fact that you won an election on this, that doesn't cut it with us. You didn't show enough scientific data. You didn't show that on the basis of expertise, having nothing to do with the people who voted Reagan into office. And that is still good law. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's very bad law,
right,
but it's valid law these days. And so that's what somebody like President Trump is up against. And it really they got hammered by it during his first administration. Mm-hmm. They've been much more careful about it this time around. They are trying to take more of the necessary administrative steps, dot all the I's, cross the T's. They're still getting litigated like crazy, of course. But they're doing a little bit better job this time around.
Dr. R.J. Pastrito with us. His new provocation is Government by the Unelected. Find it at Amazon.com and elsewhere. Professor of Politics, among other things, here at Hillsdale College. All right, on the courts. Everyone's seen these stories. District courts using injunctions to stall presidential policy, perhaps more so now than ever in the past. Supreme Court has taken some action here. Is that meaningfully reining in some of those district courts, or are there still workarounds down there?
It doesn't appear to be reining them in much. What you're referring to are these so-called nationwide injunctions where you would come before a district court judge in a particular case, and the judge might rule against the executive, not only in your case, but in all similar cases all the way across the country. And the Supreme Court did address that in a recent case, in the CASA case at the end of the last term, but there were lots of loopholes in that. And so district judges have been able to come back and use a class action certification or state lawsuits. There have been many ways around it. There's a lot of legal minutia that goes into that. But, you know, the bottom line on this, Scott, is the district courts have shown a willingness to continue abusing their authority. And unless the Supreme Court is willing to step in more aggressively and more rapidly, there's no disincentive for these district court judges to continue doing what they're doing. They have lifetime appointments,
right,
unless they are to be impeached and removed from office by Congress, which seems unlikely even in some of the worst cases. Then it's up to the higher levels in the judicial ladder. And so far, while the Trump administration has, for the most part, been winning at the Supreme Court, it takes time. The Supreme Court is disinclined to intervene. And so the district courts have been given a free rein. And it's really the place where the Trump administration's agenda has been stymied for the most part.
Moving from courts to Congress, you end the provocation, Government by the Unelected, by saying the forgotten branch here is Congress. If Congress were to reclaim its Article I powers, how much of this problem would simply disappear?
Yeah, almost all of it would disappear. And this is, I think, an important point to be clear on, because the argument I'm making in the provocation seems, in one sense, to say, look, we just have to give all of this power to the president because he's elected. And this is just because at least the people voted for the president and they didn't vote for the bureaucrats. And that's certainly true. However, there are sort of two ways in which the sovereign people are represented in our national government. One is, yes, through their elected president. The other is through their elected Congress. And it would be equally good, might even be better, if they got real representation through their elected Congress. But the whole reason that we're in the mess of the administrative state to begin with is because Congress has given away its legislative power and is greatly reluctant to take it back or even to exercise it in the most modest ways. And so that's why, to my mind, if Congress isn't going to do its job, if Congress isn't going to take back this vast discretion that is given to the agencies, which is, after all, the whole reason we even have the area of administrative law, it's the whole reason we're in court all the time, is because of this question of how much power has been given to these agencies, then the only other solution that's consistent with our Republican principles is for the other elected representative, for the president, to at least take back some control over these unelected bureaucrats.
Dr. R.J. Pastrito is Dean of the Graduate School, Professor of Politics, and Charles and Lucia Shipley Chair in the American Constitution here at Hillsdale College. His new provocation, Government by the Unelected, How It Happened and How It Might Be Tamed. You can find it at Amazon.com and elsewhere. Dr. Pastrito, thanks so much for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Thank you for having me.
Up next, Daniel Darling takes us inside his recent book, In Defense of Christian Patriotism. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Hi, I'm Tamara Wood, presiding judge of the Shasta County Superior Court. The Superior Court is currently accepting applications from individuals interested in serving on the Shasta County Grand Jury. To apply or to obtain further information, please visit ShastaCountyGrandJury.org.
The Grand Jury is one of the most important and interesting volunteer opportunities you can be part of. Applications are now being accepted. To apply or get more details, visit ShastaCountyGrandJury.org.
Be part of the solution. Apply today.
For over 50 years, House of Realty has provided experienced and effective advice to its real estate clients. Experts in residential, commercial, and investment property, we have the knowledge and tools to assist you with all of your real estate needs. Family owned and operated since 1965, we have been an active part of the Shasta County community for generations. Please call House of Realty today at 241-8300, a reputation for excellence since 1965.
Hi friends, RC here with Tobacco and Brew, bringing you this month's Cigar of the Humidor, Oliva Melano Maduro. From the verdant fields of Jalapa, Nicaragua, comes an epic 95-rated cigar, wrapped in a Maduro leaf from San Andres. Expect notes of espresso, anise, and walnut liqueur. Get yours today at Tobacco and Brew, Redding, California.
Join me, Dr. Lauren, on Tuesdays at 6 p.m. behind the pink mic for breast cancer conversations about prevention and diagnosis to healing stories and words from expert guests. Behind the Pink Mic is proudly sponsored by Sizzle's Kitchen and Swell Endeavor. Tune in with Dr. Lauren every Tuesday at 6 p.m. on KCNR 96.5 FM, 1460 AM, and streaming at KCNR1460.com. Behind the Pink Mic, let's talk healing, hope, and community.
This Hawaiian mini vacation is brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning. So what does professional office cleaning have to do with relaxing in a tropical paradise? Frankly, nothing. But Maui Bob and the crew want to remind you to be sure to take the time for what's important in this workaday world. Family, friends, and yes, even yourself. And if their professional office cleaning services can help you make that time, give them a call at 221-5868. This Hawaiian mini vacation was brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning, 221-5868.
North State Park's annual Celebration of North State Wine is back with another panel of fine wine with award-winning wines served by the North State's best wineries being held at the newly remodeled Holiday Inn with fine appetizers by their new chef. 20's theme is accented by Ladybot and the Bluebirds on stage. 20's attire is suggested. This event sells out every year, so don't miss the fun. Saturday night, March 7th at the Holiday Inn. Tickets can be purchased at pcpark.org.
The National Wild Turkey Federation's 27th Annual Redding Chapter Hunting Heritage Banquet is set for Saturday, March 14th at the Senior Citizen Center at 2290 Benton Drive. Doors open at 4:30 p.m., dinner at 6:30. To purchase tickets for the event, or if you'd like more information, contact Candy Muse at 530-526-8350 or online at nwtf.org/event.
Welcome back to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. Be sure to check out the Hillsdale College Podcast Network, all the Hillsdale College audio you can handle at podcast.hillsdale.edu or wherever you find your audio, including YouTube. We're joined by Daniel Darling. He's a pastor and the author of several books, including Agents of Grace and the new one, In Defense of Christian Patriotism, also currently serves as the director of the Land Center for Cultural Engagement at Southwestern Baptist Theological Seminary, a fellow at the Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission of the Southern Baptist Convention. Daniel, thanks so much for joining us.
Scott, thanks for having me. So great to be on here with you.
The latest book, In Defense of Christian Patriotism, begins with your argument, your statement that America is suffering a crisis of ingratitude. How would you define that?
Yeah, I really think there's a lot of Americans that, you know, the idea of patriotism, of loving your country, seems cringe or even maybe even wrong. If you look at some of the polls, the Pew Research poll does this every year, less and less Americans feel patriotic. And, you know, especially as we head into America's 250th It's really an interesting phenomenon. And I think at the heart of patriotism is this idea of gratitude. Gratitude for the country we've been given, gratitude for our ideals, gratitude for how good we have it compared to most of the rest of the world.
So this is a big question the book addresses, and maybe we shouldn't answer it all here, but the big question, what does it look like? What does it look like for Christians to faithfully steward our God-given citizenship?
That's the question I really try to answer in the book. And for a lot of Christians, they've been told over the last couple of decades that you have to choose either God or country, that to love your country is automatically a form of idolatry, that you might be dangerous, might be a Christian nationalist, and all those terms. And what I try to do is interact with Augustine and C.S. Lewis and Chesterton, and I think ultimately the Bible, that says it's not always a binary choice between God and country. Sometimes it is, right? There are times where you have to say no to your country. You think of Dietrich Bonhoeffer going, trying to, oppose the Nazis, or you think in the Bible of Peter and disciples, refusing to not preach the gospel. But most of the time it's about ordering our allegiances in the proper ordering. And of course, God has to be first, but we can have lesser allegiances, and one of those is allegiance to our nation. And I argue not only is it okay for us to be patriotic and good for us to be patriotic, but it's, I would say, required for a faithful Christian to love our country, the place God has put us. If we are, like Jeremiah tells the exiles in Babylon, to seek the welfare of our city, how can you seek the welfare of a city that you despise or that you loathe? If we're to love our neighbors as ourselves, how can we not be part of shaping the policies that affect our neighbors' flourishing? If Romans 13 says that those who have political power are held accountable, well, we too share in that power because we're a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. And so I think it's incumbent on Christians at some level to love the country they've been given, to participate in the country's preservation and shaping the policies at some level. Of course, everyone has different callings, different tasks, but at some level, it's a part of discipleship.
Some would say, well, how can you love America when so many things have been done in the past that are bad, that perhaps are evil in some way? Is it okay to love America when we know it isn't perfect?
That's a great question, and I interact with this in the book. How do we think about American history? How do we think about the national sins that America's had? You think of chattel slavery and segregation. Think of some of the treatment of, the Native Americans. Think about other abuses like that. Or if you're a conservative today, you think, how can I love a country that has legal abortion in many places, where unborn babies are killed? How can I love this country? I think there's really two wrong ways to view the bad things in our history. One is to pretend they didn't happen, to whitewash them.
Mm-hmm.
Another one is to pretend that's the only story, to pull that thread in as if that's the only part of history. And a lot of our kids in our schools have heard a history similar to that, that America's only ever done wrong things, that it was designed specifically to subjugate people and all those kinds of things. Or there's some on the sort of dissonant right that say this whole project has failed and it's only ever resulted in all the excesses of modernity and the sexual revolution and expressive individualism. I think it's a wrong way to look at history. I think history has both, has good and bad. And if you look at the way the Bible looks at history, if you look, the Bible tells its own story of its own heroes. It does tell the story, warts and all. And yet it doesn't act like that's the entire story, right? And I think that's how we should look at America. We can love our country and yet acknowledge her sins. And when you are expressing patriotism and saying you love your country, you're saying you love the people, the place, the good things we've passed down, the symbols, the rich pantheon of heroes. And yet you're also saying we love our ideals that we've not yet fully lived up to, the ideals of liberty and freedom and all those things. This is what some of the great social reformers in American history have done. If you think about Martin Luther King or Frederick Douglass, they revered the country. They revered the founding. They loved our ideals. And yet they urged people, and they urged America, to live up to those ideals. If you have nothing about the country that you love or cherish, then how can you urge it to get better?
Daniel Darling with us. His recent book, In Defense of Christian Patriotism. There's this there's a language shift, and I was trying to think. It goes back at least to President Obama, in which the freedom of religion turns into the freedom of worship or freedom to worship. What should we think about that change in language among some on the left?
Yeah, you know, it's a subtle shift, but it's an important shift. And I think it's part and parcel to some of the ways that the left misread, I would say, the Establishment Clause and other parts of the Constitution in the latter half of the 20th century. And this change from freedom of religion to freedom of worship is subtle. What they're saying is, oh, it's really good and right and okay that you gather on Sundays to worship. Or if you're Jewish, you gather in your synagogues or however you worship. That's really good and it's private. But if you let your faith determine the way you live, if you let it influence public policy, for instance, or other things that you care about, well, that's out of bounds, you know. And what they're trying to do is appeal to this, I think, false idea of secularism that took root in the last part of the 20th century. This idea that we have a neutral public square. And, you know, Richard John Neuhaus wrote 40 years ago in his book, The Naked Public Square, that there's really no such thing, that the naked public square will be naked for not very long. Something will fill it. Someone's values will fill it. Every one of us bring our values to the public square. We bring it to our daily lives and the way we live. Some acknowledge it and some don't. And the question is, a lot of our thinking, whether it's in the media or in the courts, has sought to push that away or shame Christians for that. And I think we have to recover a sense of a robust faith, that our faith is lived out in all areas of life. Christians believe that faith is not restricted to what we do on Sunday. It's important that we gather on Sunday and we worship, but it affects our entire lives, right? Abraham Kuyper said there's not one square inch that God does not declare that is his. And this is how Christians believe, and this is how most people of faith believe. And so I think that that shift, and you saw it really during the Obama administration when they were, you know, taking legal action against, for instance, the Little Sisters of the Poor and others who, because of their faith, could not consent to subsidizing contraceptives or abortifacients. Same with companies like Hobby Lobby. It's like, well, it's great that you're Christians. It's really nice. We appreciate that. But you need to not let that affect some of these decisions. But for Christians, these are moral decisions. And so I think that's a really bad reading of what the founders intended. Thankfully, I think the courts in the 21st century have really pushed back on some of that idea. And rather than seeing the Establishment Clause as hostile to Christianity, hostile to faith, has pushed back on some of their decisions, particularly, you know, Trinity Lutheran, Hobby Lobby, the Fulton case, and others, where it's allowed a more robust expression of Christian faith while still honoring this experiment that we don't want a state church. We don't want a national church. The founders didn't want that. I don't think that's a good idea as a Baptist. And yet what we don't want is this idea that you push religion to the margins. Our founders understood that this democracy, this experiment in human government, will only flourish with a healthy, thick layer of religion and virtue, and I'd argue Christianity.
We'll continue next with Daniel Darling, his book, In Defense of Christian Patriotism. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Mandina's Cabinets, the local pros.
Mandina's Cabinets in Anderson designs custom kitchens, bathrooms, and offices that no big box store can match. They are the local pros who know.
Mandina's Cabinets, the local pros who know. Mandina's Cabinets, the local pros.
530-365-8108 or visit mandinascabinets.com.
Every day, your life is filled with choices. And when a health crisis happens, you need to be prepared to choose the best healthcare partner. That's when Shasta Regional Medical Center is there to answer the call above the rest. Ranked best in Reading and in the nation for patient safety and clinical excellence, you can be confident that when you choose Shasta, you are choosing superior care, safety, and excellence for you and your family. Choose Shasta at ShastaRegional.com.
Do you have something you'd like to get painted? Then bring it to Victory Powder Coating. Powder coating is a durable, colorful, environmentally friendly alternative to paint. It's useful in automotive, agricultural, decorative, and high-temperature applications. Victory Powder Coating has become the North State leader in powder coating applications and metal finishing. They specialize in large industrial items like truck beds, agricultural equipment, and trailers. They're dedicated to providing superior work and outstanding customer care. Consider Victory Powder Coating for your next project. Victory Powder Coating.
Charlu's Tap House in Anderson, where tradition, taste, and togetherness come to life. Warm up with our made-from-scratch soups and signature family sauces, crafted from cherished recipes passed down through generations. Watch the magic happen when we hand-toss every pizza to order, then bake it to perfection. Crispy, cheesy, and made with love. Let the little ones explore our brand-new adventure room with bounce houses, arcade games, and even a make-your-own pizza table where the kids can make their own pizza. Charlu's Tap House in Anderson, where tradition, taste, and togetherness come to life.
Experience a wintry mix with the Shasta College Symphony Orchestra Saturday, February 28th at 7:30 p.m. at the Shasta College Theater. Enjoy music from Verdi and Beethoven and more, plus a melody from My Fair Lady featuring the outstanding winners of the Emerging Artist Solo and Area Competition. This special concert is sponsored in part by Vituity Anesthesia Reading. Tickets and information can be found online at shastacollege.edu/events.
Ever you are, and whenever you want. And it's always free. Find out more about all of our shows at podcast.hillsdale.edu. You can subscribe to any program with new episodes delivered right to your device. If you want to come close to stepping inside a Hillsdale College classroom, well, the Hillsdale College Podcast Network is for you. Get informed and get entertained at podcast.hillsdale.edu. That's podcast.hillsdale.edu.
We're back on the radio-free Hillsdale Hour. Be sure to follow us on X at Hillsdale Radio or the Hillsdale College Podcast Network at HC Podcasts. We've been talking with Daniel Darling, his new book, In Defense of Christian Patriotism. Daniel, the Bible certainly says nothing about America specifically. The dates don't quite line up. But what does the Bible perhaps say about how Christians are to be patriotic?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think the Bible has a lot to say about our relationship with the state and sort of the, you know, how we should think about that. Of course, the New Testament is written to people who didn't have the kind of power and agency that we have in America. Very few people in human history have had the kind of voice and vote and liberty to shape our country like we do. But the Bible does have a lot to say about the state, you know, that God has delegated power to the state. Romans 13, 1 Timothy 2 tells us to pray for those in authority that we might live a quiet, peaceful life. Jesus famously said, render to Caesar what's Caesar and to God's what is God's. There are things that God has delegated to the state that we should respect, but then there are things that the state has no right over, the conscience and those kinds of things, that there are different spheres that God has created. I think a country, a Christian, number one, should see our citizenship as a stewardship. That God has given this to us, how do we steward it well? And how do we preserve what we have for the next generation? I think secondly, to love our country in the right order. So if we love God first, then that will flow into our love for our country. And, you know, it will give us a sense of realism about what can be achieved in a fallen world. It will give us a sense of perspective that as good as America is, it's not the kingdom of God. And yet it should... The scriptures also teach us a lot about gratitude and thankfulness, about the place that God has put us.
You quote, or I think paraphrase, Chuck Colson in the book, he's mentioned a number of times, that politics shouldn't be seen as an ultimate prize, but as a useful vehicle for human flourishing. What does that transaction look like? The accumulation of power to then affect the abilities for humans to thrive?
Yeah, I think first of all, you know, there's a lot of conversations about power right now, and a lot of critics of conservative Christian activism also, you know, you're centered around power and you're grasping for power. I think a lot of those criticisms are unfair, but, you know, power is something that can be avoided. It's something to be stewarded. And whether you realize it or not, you have power. I think when it comes to politics, you know, Christianity, rather than being, we hear so many warnings, Scott, about the danger of Christians in politics and mixing the two and how bad it is. And it can be, there can be forms of political activism in Christianity that are unhealthy. But my argument is the exact opposite, that faithful church-going Christians are exactly the kind of people you want in politics, because, you know, if you're going to church every week and you're worshiping something that's transcendent, someone that's transcendent, something that is more powerful than the most powerful political leaders, if you're understanding the brokenness of the world and you believe that one day Christ is going to return and make all things new, then it gives you a sense of realism of what you can actually do, that there's a lot of good we can do when Christians get involved. We can do so much good. And if you look through history, whether you read the great historians like Rodney Stark or Tom Holland or others who have documented that wherever Christianity has spread, for the most part, on the net, it has been good for society. There's a lot we can do, Scott. And yet we understand there's limits. And so when I think Christians in politics are helpful, because when politics is not this all-important thing, that it's our everything, then I think we can engage it wisely. I think the danger comes in for folks who are not particularly religious. Politics becomes a god, and politics is a poor god. It will never satisfy. We'll always be disappointed. There's always going to be an election we lose. There's always going to be a policy fight we don't win. There's always going to be scandals or whatever that disappoint us. So it makes a poor god. But politics can be a useful vehicle with a dose of realism to do some good in a fallen world.
Daniel Darling with us. His book is In Defense of Christian Patriotism. There's six ways listed the church can help renew America. Number four is strengthen families. And then there's another chapter altogether, the war on family. What has the breaking apart of the family structure done to harm patriotism in America?
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that. I really wanted to put, you know, in this book, I didn't just want to have, you know, a defense of patriotism and a defense of Christian political activism in our history and all those things. But in the back half, I wanted to say, okay, now that we're patriotic and love our country, want to preserve this nation and steward our citizenship, what does that look like? And it's not by accident that I put one of the first chapters in that section on the family, because I do really think that the family is the building block of a healthy society. And all the data shows us this. If you've seen the work of folks like Brad Wilcox at University of Virginia and others, Melissa Kearney at the Brookings Institute, all the social ills that we experience really have the root in the breakdown of the family. And flourishing has its root in healthy families. Children flourish best when they have a mother and father committed to each other at home, in marriage for life. That doesn't to say that if you grew up in a family that didn't have that, that you're doomed, right? I mean, we believe in redemption and restoration and forgiveness, and thank God there's a lot of churches and folks that are filling that gap. But as a society, we've had an experiment in the last 50 to 60 years, a social experiment, to say what would it look like if families, you know, less families had fathers, and we had all these sort of new sorts of families. Well, the experiment has not been good, right? Daniel Patrick Moynihan warned about this several generations ago and was widely ridiculed, and it turned out he was right. And so I think one of the ways that we can be patriotic, one of the ways we can preserve our nation for the next 250 years is really to invest in families, both at the policy level, any kind of sort of policy things that can nurture and help families economically and socially, but also in civil society, our churches and our civic groups. What can we do to support struggling families and encourage marriage and family? And I think it's a really important thing.
Daniel, there's such a focus these days on what's happening nationally, what's happening in Washington, D.C., what's happening with this president and this administration, and that's what leads virtually every national newscast these days, and even local newscasts. Late in the book, you call for Christians to embrace localism, and I wonder if some might be surprised that how hard it seems to affect change on a national level so far away from us, perhaps how easy or how less hard it is to affect change at a local level.
Yeah, that's a great question. I wanted to put that in the book because when you write a book like this on patriotism and politics and families, people, all of us tend to think the big national headlines and the big national stories. And those are important. I don't think we should disengage there. But really, there are some issues that most people don't feel like they have the agency to solve nationally. Maybe they vote, and they should vote. They get involved, they speak out. Those are all important things. But there are things we can do locally. And many of our toughest problems are best solved to city, state, and city and state, and even, you know, community level. And I am most discouraged about the country when I think about some of these issues on a national level and how much we disagree and we're divided. But when I go locally and I see what folks are doing, whether they're nonprofits or churches or even people rolling up their sleeves and getting involved in, say, like city government or school boards, there's a lot of good work being done. And so one of the things I want to say is, and this is particularly when people say, okay, I want to get involved. What do I do? Well, not everyone has the same calling. You know, some are called to run for office. Some are called to be a commentator or speak or teach or all that. But for most people, it's what can I do in my community that is beneficial? Can I be involved in my church? Can I be involved in this charitable thing? Can I start a school or, you know, a Christian school or a, you know, a charter school or something like that? Can I help with an innovative program to feed the underserved in my community? Can I help get on the local city council or something and help make change? Those are things that are within grasp of most people. And Alexis de Tocqueville, in his book, Democracy in America, one of the things he noticed, well, he noticed a couple of things. One was that America uniquely had what he called the spirit of liberty and the spirit of religion sort of running parallel. But the another thing he noticed was how local America was, that it was, you had all these, you know, what Edmund Burke or Russell Kirk, I remember, called the mediating institutions, that you had these civic clubs and churches and all these things. And that's the strength of our country. And so when I talk about patriotism, it's not just feeling a swelling of pride when Chris Stapleton sings the national anthem at the Super Bowl, which you should, and I do. But it's also, how can I be patriotic and steward my citizenship here in my, where God has put me in this community, in this town, in a way that will help preserve it for the next generation?
Daniel Darling is the director of the Land Center for Cultural Engagement at Southwestern Baptist Theological Seminary, also a fellow at the Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission of the Southern Baptist Convention, and the author of the book, In Defense of Christian Patriotism. Daniel, thanks so much for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Thank you, Scott. I really appreciate it and the work that you are doing.
That will wrap up this edition of the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. Our thanks to Dr. R.J. Pistrito from Hillsdale's Politics Department, and also Daniel Darling, his recent book, In Defense of Christian Patriotism. Remember, you can hear new episodes every week on this station. You also can find extended versions of some of our interviews or listen anytime to the podcast. Find it at podcast.hillsdale.edu or wherever you get your audio. Until next week, I'm Scott Bertram, and this has been the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Court is in session with Letter of the Law.
Join me for the first Thursday of every month at 6 p.m. for my show, North State Now. In this one-hour show, we cover what's happening in the music scene, theater, food, and arts. We get in-depth interviews with local business owners, musicians, actors, and authors. Listen in, tune in, call in, participate. Win tickets to concerts and theater productions. It's a lot of fun, and believe me, it keeps us going. Join me, your host, Linda Bott, or North State Now, the first Thursday, right here on KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM. Also streaming at KCNR1460.com.
Join Aaron and Bill for We the People Radio, Sundays, noon until 2.
It's conservative talk radio with a liberal dose of humor. Get the whole story from experts around the world delivering facts rather than opinion.
Missed a show? Busy at noon? No problem. Listen to our free archives when you have time. No commercial interruptions or download restrictions. We the People Radio.
.us. What shall we do
about them? At Plumas Bank, we understand business because we've grown alongside you in the communities we call home. We're proud to grow in Redding and excited to welcome Anderson and Red Bluff to the Plumas Bank family. With our new locations, your business gains expanded lending powers, more convenient locations, and more than 40 years of trusted community banking experience. Plumas Bank, building stronger communities. Learn more at plumasbank.com.
A message from Todd with Reading Online Marketing.
Here's the truth.
Your competitors aren't smarter and they aren't better. Their marketing is.
Reading Online Marketing has years of experience and results backed by real data to put you on top. For maximum impact, ask about exclusive KCNR radio and digital marketing packages. Put your business everywhere your customers are.
We are local and can answer all your questions. Call me at 530-378-4060 or visit readingonlinemarketing.com.
This is Ted Leidy with Northern Firearms Instruction. Do you have a crazy schedule and can't seem to get to a class to qualify for your CCW, CCW renewal, or maybe learn to use that new firearm you just purchased? Consider a private class with NFI. Learn to shoot a handgun, rifle, shotgun, or even a BB gun. Classes are taught by an instructor that you choose on your dates and location. Give NFI a call at 530-999-1822 or visit us online at usgunpro.com. This is Ted Leidy, and I'll see you at the range.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.